This is Jazz of Enchantment, a radio series spotlighting just some of the fine jazz players with ties to New Mexico. I'm Paul Ingalls. Born in New York City, raised in Connecticut, and now living in New Mexico, pianist Kevin Hayes has been on something of the fast track since first sitting down at the piano at the age of 6. By 15, he was playing professionally. At 17, he was playing with sax great Nick Brignola. At 19, he was touring the U.S. and Europe. He then settled back into New York City, and word started to spread about his jazz piano and compositional skills. Kevin told me and David Howes he was as surprised as anyone when he suddenly started getting calls from jazz greats interested in playing with him.
And I remember I was living with Bill Stewart at the time, and I came home one evening, and he said, Joe called. And I said, Joe who? He said, Joe Henderson. I said, come on, man, don't do that. Don't lie to me. But I checked the machine, and I heard, you know, right, this is Joe. I don't know if you're in town or out of town. He had a certain thing that he would say, you know, and sort of a character. And the next thing I knew, you know, I was on an airplane going, flying to San Diego to play with Joe Henderson. And I, this can't be happening. You know, it's just incredible, you know. From there, you know, I mean, it's just a sort of a matter of sticking around New York, for me, and meeting musicians and playing jam sessions, and, you know, word of mouth is kind of the way it works in New York. You know, if you get together and this guy says, oh, you should check out this guy, and this, you know, call this guy for a gig, and this guy, hey, this guy plays well, and this...
And they don't pass around recommendations unless you can play.
Well, yeah. So, you know. Yeah. So,
and that's how it works, is what...
Basically, yeah. You know, you don't go into a jam session with your degree on your...
Yeah.
You know, you go in, how do you play? You know what I mean?
And a lot of big names like the way Kevin Hayes played. Joshua Redman, Benny Golson, Roy Haynes, Bob Belden, and many more have invited Kevin along on tours and on CDs. In 1994, Kevin cut his first CD as a leader, Seventh Sense, for the vaunted Blue Note label.
I think at that time I was really interested in creating different textures, both compositionally and instrumentally.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's why that record worked out, you know, that way, because I was thinking about that. Also, Scofield produced that first record.
John Scofield.
Yeah, yes. who I had never met, although it was really cool to have him there too, and he had some great suggestions on, you know, music. For instance, on that track, there's a thing at the end of the tune I'm not even sure originally how I had planned to end it, if I had a plan at all, but maybe some kind of vamp out, you know. Mm-hmm. But we wound up doing this sort of strange, ethereal sort of sounding thing, just rehearsing, messing around, and John got on the talkback mic and said, hey, you should do that, you know.
Okay.
Do that at the end of the tune, you know, when it's going out. And so you hear that at the end, and that was John's suggestion.
Okay,
you
know, that's interesting. What other stuff did you bring that, musically, did you bring with you that you wanted to let us know about?
I brought a recording. There's actually two tracks from a live recording that the trio did in Paris. I brought two tunes. I think one is the Anniversary Waltz, which is a song that I played, learned with Roy Haynes, the great drummer. So I played that with his group, and I was sort of fiddling around with it one day, and I just started reharmonizing it, you know, putting different bass notes. And so it's turned into something that I enjoy playing, and I've brought it into different bands. I've played it with Al Foster and his band. I worked with some, and we play it as a trio kind of feature. And some people think it's corny, but I kind of like it. You know? I remember we were playing it at the Village Vanguard recently with Al Foster's group, and the owner of the club, Lorraine Gordon, had some comments, something to of the nature of, don't bring that bar mitzvah music in here. You know,
too bad she didn't have an opinion about it.
Something like that, yeah. Yeah, she's a funny lady.
Thank you.
So I brought that, and then, gosh, I'm blanking on the other one I brought. I wish I had the paper in front of me.
Is it What Survives?
What Survives, exactly, which is the title track from a self-produced CD that I put out a couple years ago. Well, What Survives is from a Rainer Maria Rilke poem, the German poet. Basically, I just sat down one night with this book of his poetry and opened it up, and I hit record and on my tape player at home in Brooklyn at the time I was living, basically improvised it through, you know, singing this lyric into the microphone and coming up with a melody. And I made some changes to it, but it was pretty much just kind of came that way, you know.
Influence of jazz when you were a teenager.
Mm.
What really kind of, do you have an event or a particular memory of?
I remember, I mean, one of my earliest recordings that I ever heard. I don't know how this recording made it in the house, but somehow we had a Jimmy Smith record called Organ Grinder Swing. And I remember, you know, it had like Satin Doll, the old cliche tunes on it, but it was so swinging, you know, that it was just the feeling of the music, you know, just got in me, you know. Mm-hmm. And I remember that being kind of a pivotal moment. Also, when I first started taking jazz piano, which was with a jazz pianist who died a few years ago by the name of Lou Stein, who was a old session musician back in the 40s. As it turns out, my father took lessons at the same time I was taking lessons, so we would go up there and take lessons, not at the same time, but one after the other up in upstate New York, not far from where I grew up.
That must have been a bit of a bonding experience.
Yeah, it was interesting. You know, it was like talking chords.
Okay? Uh-huh.
Do you get this? No, not quite.
Well, that's cool.
You know, but and then another pivotal experience was when I went to Interlochen music camp in the summer. I spent a few years there, and
that's in upstate Michigan.
Yeah, exactly. Near Traverse City, right? So I went there and took sort of a crash course in jazz voicings and piano by a teacher by the name of Charles Argersinger, who I think taught at DePaul University. Anyway, I was a total beginner at that point. But I remember calling home from one of these summers. It might have been my first one there. I was maybe, I don't know, 13 or 14 years old. And I just said, you know, I remember calling my parents and just saying, you know, I can't imagine doing anything else. This is it. Interestingly, you know, the first time I heard Miles, again, a Miles Davis record wound up in my house.
For some reason.
But I remember hearing Four and More, Miles Davis album, which is the fast songs from the Carnegie Hall concert. I guess it was early 60s, I don't know what it was, maybe 63 or something, whenever the beginning of that band with George Coleman. And I remember putting that on and really actually being very confused by it and disliking it, actually. I thought this is, because I was used to listening to, you know, kind of music that was a little more groove oriented, and mm-hmm. his stuff was super fast, and I didn't get it, and I said, this isn't swinging, you know. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it took me a second to sort of adjust to that and realize, of course, how great it was. I mean, that's a pretty, it actually is a fairly raw record, sure. if you think about it. You know?
Sure, sure.
If you go back and listen to it.
You brought some Miles with you.
Yeah.
You brought a track.
Yeah. I brought something off of Miles Smiles. The quintet with Tony Williams and Ron Carter and Wayne Shorter, Herbie Hancock. I brought the tune Orbits from the record, and she's just playing so incredibly beautifully, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, why was this music important to you?
Probably there's so many elements to it that have inspired me. Not the least of which was Miles himself. You mm-hmm. know, as free as that music was, the way he played it, and with the lyricism, you know, and his, of course, his sound and his phrasing. You know, I just realized how. I mean, I was just listening to it on the way down here. You know, I thought this is so rare. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I think maybe the other elements that were appealing to me was the kind of freedom, and but also the control, incredible control, you know, that all of those musicians had.
Let me ask you, how did you end up in New Mexico?
I guess about 2003, late in 2003, to be honest, was feeling a little burned out from New York and the scene and the kind of grind, you know. I was on the road a lot, and I just needed a break. So I took one, and I wound up out here. And I even had this sense, you know, before I moved here, that I said, you know, something about this sounds right to me. It just feels like, yeah, I think I'm going to like it there. I'd never been, you know.
Okay.
And as soon as I got here, you know, and I saw one sunset, I was like, and I saw the way the light hit the mountains, you know, and I just thought, I think this is really for me, you know.
Yeah.
Is there a track of music that when you listen to it, you could say, this is New Mexico calling, or this wouldn't have happened if I'd stayed in New York?
You know, I think on some level that this solo record, Open Range, that I just, you know, just came out, I mean, it's certainly packaged that way. And I don't disagree with it, you know, and it's fine, and it's sort of a theme, you know, record. And
what do you mean it's packaged that way? Just because?
Well, I mean the liner note. I mean, you know, yeah. The liner notes indicate that, I was very conscious of, you know, choosing titles, and the fact is that most of the record is improvised, you know, and it just seemed like an appropriate fit, you know. I mean, it is a different experience waking up, you know, on a mountain top in the high desert than it is in a basement apartment in Park Slope, Brooklyn, you know, with a car alarm going off. I mean, those are two distinct experiences, and they've had an effect. I'm not uncomfortable with the label of jazz musician. In a way, you know, at times I have been, because I haven't always liked what certain people maybe represent that as, you know, or it can get boxed. You know, you can get boxy with it, and I'm proud to call myself one. At the same time, I don't feel like it's a badge that I have to wear to prove to anyone that, you know, I've done my homework or something, or that I, you know...
Well, most of the real greats are completely out of the box people, aren't they?
In a sense, yeah. I mean, it's a funny thing, you know. It's
they're risk takers and
exactly.
They're experimenters and
exactly.
They aren't afraid to fail or
yeah.
be seen as failing.
And you know, yeah. that's jazz.
Yeah.
you
right.
know,
it's life.
That's life, and that's but that's the adventure.
Yeah.
Pianist Kevin Hayes talking with David House. Hear more from Kevin at our website, newmexicojazz.org. That's newmexicojazz.org for more profiles of New Mexico jazz musicians. Our staff includes Nola Daves Moses, Carol Boss, and Genevieve Russell. Funding from the New Mexico Humanities Council, the City of Albuquerque's Urban Enhancement Trust Fund, KUNM, and Good Radio Shows Incorporated. I'm Paul Ingalls.